present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from Motoring and Leisure magazine, read by Brian Perkins.
When negotiating floods, some drivers have the notion that the faster they go, the easier it is to pass water.
Well, thanks to all of you who sent us that. Now let's meet the team. So you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Jane Thin. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and newcomer to the news quiz, Vincent Hanna. Before we start round one, here's an advertisement from the Royston Crow.
Auto Spares Royston would like to give our hearty congratulations to Geoffrey Reed on cocking up 50 years with the company.
Thank you, Tony Knott of Royston, for sending us that. Francis, you get the first question, as always, and it's this. What's still special in spite of their spats?
My colleague here, who's read rather more newspapers than I have this week, has written the words Clinton and Major. This means nothing to me, but could it be to do with President?
It could indeed.
Spat and Prime Minister Major.
Yeah.
When Major arrived in America, Clinton went off to Arkansas to watch a basketball match on television to avoid having to meet him at the airport. And he then met him very briefly at the White House and avoided him for another day or two. And then on Major's last night, Major was having dinner with the British ambassador in a bit of a sulk because Clinton wasn't having dinner with him. And late at night, Clinton turned up at the embassy and said, "Hi, why don't we go out and paint the town red?" And so they went off and ate a bit of cake in some cafe for half an hour. And apparently, according to the little report I saw, they swapped jokes for half an hour.
God, what a gay evening that was. For a man who hasn't read the newspaper, he seems to know an awful lot. You're absolutely right. This is about John Major, who went to Washington to meet President Clinton to patch up their differences, saying even the best of pals had their spats. Never one to be outdone, Mr. Major flew over on his new prime ministerial jet, Airfix 1. As he came down the steps, the US Marine Band struck up their usual greeting for special guests from this side of the Atlantic, two verses of When Irish Eyes Are Smiling. Jane, your question now. Who looked like she needed treatment after some rough house treatment?
I think this is Virginia Bottomley, who's in danger, actually. She's this great British institution who's going to be closed down due to lack of demand. And I'm sure sooner or later there'll be a protest petition saying that, you know, she's still needed and important, but it hasn't materialised yet. She's had a pretty bad week of it.
I think she's going to be immortalised in the Oxford English Dictionary eventually as an adverb, probably. You're behaving absolutely bottomly today.
It wasn't all that smart to announce the closure of Bart's by leaving a message behind the cistern in the third loo along in Victoria Station and hoping no one would notice it.
This is about Health Secretary Virginia Bottomley, who came in for a mauling in the Commons over London hospital closures. She was subjected to a vicious attack from a jeering opposition, which is a terrible shame because it left Labour with nothing to do. As a matter of interest, the Health Secretary's full name is Virginia Hilda Brunette Maxwell Bottomley. Listeners may remember happier times when she was an outright winner at Crufts. Vincent, welcome to the programme. The question is this. Which pair got the bullet, then sniped at each other?
Oh, this is the strange business. Anne Cluett and Jim Cousins are two Labour MPs. Very mysterious. Anne Cluett wanted to go to Turkey and observe Kurds, and Jim Cousins went along to protect her. Rubbish, says Anne. He didn't come along to protect me. I had to hold his hand. And she says he bleated and whimpered every time any trouble started. Anyway, halfway through their trip in Turkey, the Labour whips got through on a reverse charge phone call to the trench in which they were crouched and told them to get back home on the next plane as the Whitefish Authority No. 2 bill second reading was going through. And she said, "No, I can't come back, and I'm not coming back." Whereupon they sacked her from the front bench. And she says it's a vendetta against her. And Jim Cousins says, "I never wanted to go with her in the first place."
Absolutely right. Well done. This is about Tony Blair starting to sack members of his front bench. Yet more proof he's more like a Tory than the Tories. The two MPs sacked for missing a Commons vote were Jim Cousins, a campaigner for more jobs in the North East, and Anne Cluett, a campaigner for more vowels in surnames. Alan, will you have a listen to this?
I don't have much to say.
titles, and you won't see me, of course. And your question is, what panoramic view wasn't seen because of TV interference?
Oh, this is the heartbreaking story of how the Scots weren't allowed to see John Major before they voted, as if it was going to change their minds about anything. There is one Tory in Scotland, and he wanted to see his Prime Minister before he went out and had good reason to change his mind. This has made everybody very upset at the BBC, who backed down because the law lords came in and said, you can't possibly broadcast John Major. It might influence people's opinion, and he will have no seats at all.
This is the Panorama interview with John Major that was banned in Scotland, causing road chaos in England, and thousands of viewers went out in their cars trying to go north over the border. The BBC used to get round the Sinn Féin broadcast by using appropriate actors. Luckily, on this occasion, they had the foresight to dig out some Joe 90 videos. And no one noticed the difference. And the scores at the end of the first round, as they are on most occasions on the news quiz, are 4-4. We start round two with an item from the Shropshire Star.
Actress Cathy Staff, who plays Nora Batty in Last of the Summer Wine, is bound for America thanks to Leeds-born playwright Alan Bennett. She is to appear in Julia Roberts' latest film, Mary Riley, which will retell the classic horror tale, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It hasn't been revealed which role the Cheshire-born actress will play.
Thank you, those of you who sent us that. Francis, your question again. What floated in with bad vibes?
Would this be Oriana?
It would.
Or Oriana Stassinopoulos, as it's known. It's a new ship, a cruise liner.
Yes.
Which was launched with great pomp and ceremony. But it was slightly delayed because it had an attack of the jitters. It was just about, a huge project, just about to be delivered, when they discovered that the whole ship was rocking from side to side and juddering like mad. So they had to take it back and put in a few more cogs and sprockets. And then it came back for the Queen to throw champagne at it. And now it's going to sail off.
I was on a cruise once, where the boat juddered all the time, but nobody complained. One or two of the women, but for most of them, they're quite happy.
This is a British, thoroughly British ship, isn't it? Made by German people.
Well, you can tell by the British name, can't you? Oriana, yeah.
Because it's made by the Germans, all the sun lounges around the pool are already reserved.
Oh, I see.
It's when it goes down to periscope depth and sinks the QE2 that I should begin to worry.
The Times set absolutely new standards in drivel this morning. It will sail from sunrise to sunset, it said, as a symbol of British innovation and faith in the future.
After that, it sinks. Anyway, this is P&O's new cruise ship, the Oriana, that arrived with a nasty vibration caused by bent propellers. She will fly the British flag, but was made in Germany, and this has caused some upset. Even Prince Philip felt the need to comment, "Where would we be if German imports were paraded round the world as British?" British dockyards were asked how they felt about P&O's flagship being German built. We can't repeat exactly what they said, but coincidentally it started with P and O. Jane, what weighty problem is losing patience?
It's Mr. Soames, is it? Is he on a diet?
No, but he is, but this is not the question.
Oh, it's the ambulances, isn't it? They're so high-tech that you cannot fit patients in the ambulances, can you? Which actually
makes them the most efficient ambulances in the world, because they have a 100% record of delivery and collection. They just don't have patients.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because in today's NHS you can't get the patients in the hospitals anyhow, so, you know, why get them in the ambulances to start with, really?
Is there going to be Mrs. Bottomley in every round, just so we know?
No, this is not Bottomley. It's
well,
just,
it's indirectly Bottomley.
Well, it's some Bottomley, as I said earlier. But
it has Bottomley tinges.
It has Bottomley tinges to it. You couldn't get poor old Fatty Soames in it, though, could you? So,
do you remember the great crack in the House of Commons when he said about some policy, it's not preserved in aspic, you know, and Tony Banks said, if it was, you'd eat it.
This is the East Anglian Health Service, who have bought a fleet of high-tech ambulances that are too heavy to carry patients of average weight. Norfolk 999 calls are now answered with which service caller, fire, police or Weight Watchers? The Canadian-built vehicles are at their legal weight limit because they carry vital equipment such as a 6-inch gun in case they spot any Spanish ambulances picking up tiny little packages. Vincent, here's a piece of music for you.
For my military knowledge, though I'm plucky and adventurous, has only been put down at the beginning of the century, but still in matters vegetable, animal and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
Question is, Vincent, why is top brass looking brassed off?
Well, this is a man called Michael Bett, who was the deputy chairman, I think, of British Telecom, and used to be the director of personnel in the BBC.
Yeah.
And he was hired by the government to weed out waste in the army, and he decided to amalgamate lots of general ranks so that you will only have one admiral instead of 243, and all these uniforms will have to be reduced to one large smock with a star on it. And the other thing, too, which he discovered, which everybody knew about but kept quiet, was that when you're old and clapped out and a chief of staff, on your very last day, they promote you to a field marshal. As you leave the building, they give you a baton so that you get an extra big pension. And he's decided to abolish that, too. Now, when he was at the BBC, didn't do any of that.
Well, he made the chairman a duke.
Now, he came first.
These are plans to cut numbers by merging higher ranks in the armed forces, as you so rightly say, Vincent, and to make pay performance related, which puts an interesting twist on the idea of monthly targets. The RAF is to scrap Air Commodore and Group Captain, and the Army is combining Brigadier and Colonel. However, the Navy say Vice Admirals won't give up their vices, and Rear Admirals are definitely not surrendering their privileges. Alan, which blue boy rolled into trouble with the boys in blue?
Oh, it's not. Oh, no, we can't. That's not fair.
No, it's not.
What's
not
they fair? Have suffered enough.
It's
not Tom Parker Bowles.
Oh, it is.
Oh,
shit.
Well. No. I mean, it's extremely unfair. He's had to change his name. It's a very straightforward story. He was found with a small quantity of brain. he had a little bit of ecstasy, rather, like his mother. And they...
He's not being charged,
he's being let off with a caution. Can we stop it there?
Yes. I think you suffered enough, as you so rightly say.
Father's knocking about with some slapper as well, according to the Daily Mail. I saw that. There was another big blonde.
This is getting awfully torrid.
Queen's all right, though, sounds as well. Blanford was in trouble again. I mean, the BBC is not biased in favour of the working class, but Blanford was in trouble again. Ran away from a taxi without paying. Got 20 million quid. I don't know why they don't shoot him. I think they should all... When you think the Romanovs did so little to be so heavily punished, and our lot are such a galere of rat bags, I don't know why one doesn't go to Ascot and see all the heads on poles.
And I have to tell you that the scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with a news item from the Kidderminster Express and Star, sent in by Dave Collins of Kidderminster.
Midland aristocrat Lady Cobham has split with her husband in the wake of her affair with love cheat MP David Mellor. The rector of Hagley, the Reverend Alan Brooksbank, said the people of Hagley have been very supportive to Lord and Lady Cobham. They are trying to understand all the ins and outs of the situation.
Francis, your time for a question again. Who had a hot time 25 years after a bunker shot?
It's Adolf Hitler.
Indeed it is.
Adolf Hitler possibly turns out, may or may not be true, that at the end of the war, the Russians found his body and that of Eva Braun and I think the Goebbels family, who so charmingly killed their children, and dumped in a place called Magdeburg. And then 25 years later, when these Germans were about to regain control of Magdeburg from the Soviets, the KGB had them burned, which seems a bit vindictive 25 years after the event, but it was because they were afraid it would become a shrine or something. But the odd thing is, a professor in Oxford, Professor Norman Stone, who is writing a book at the moment claiming that he has seen Hitler's skull and particularly Hitler's teeth. It's in a filing cabinet in Moscow. He opened this file and there was Hitler's skull with its teeth, or Martin Amis's teeth, or somebody's teeth, anyway. And he's been slightly scuppered because it now turns out that Hitler was burnt from top to toe, so the skull must have belonged to somebody else, perhaps the late Mr. Chernenko, or Yuri Gagarin, or who knows what, or that monkey that
was filed under. Filed under the skull.
But there's a professor in Vienna, it's true, who says it's not true, that the Russians would never have disposed of the body of Hitler. Goebbels, yes, and the children and all that, they wouldn't come in. But it's definitely in some filing cabinet. So Stone may be right.
Well, also, Norman Stone writes a column for the Sunday Times, Rupert Murdoch's paper, which, of course, has an interest in all this because it ran the Hitler diaries a few years ago. And it's hard to see how he could have kept his diaries if he was a mere skull in a filing cabinet, which does suggest that his writing hand survived as well.
The one I feel sorry for is this Alsatian wolf. He was a loyal dog right through the war. You think the least I could have done was give him the bones. I've seen those pictures of wolf. They've got an 8mm colour shot of Hitler and Eva Braun and wolf all dancing together.
Absolutely wonderful.
He never gave him a second thought after April the 8th, you know. They called him a dog lover. I don't think he was a nice man at all.
This is the report that Adolf Hitler's remains were dug up and incinerated by the KGB in 1970. The original story was that the Nazi leader left orders his staff should nip out and get some petrol to burn his body in 1945, but there was never good evidence for this. For example, no one ever claimed the set of tumblers and the sports bag even saving up. Jane, will you have a listen to this? And your question is, who subscribes to a notion that's as easy as ABC?
This is BT, isn't it? Which is not content with squandering its profits on quite appalling adverts with Bob Hoskins irritatingly telling you to use the phone more, is now decided it's got to make more money by selling numbers as letters, isn't it? And you can turn your little message into a number for a price.
People have booked numbers already. McDonald's have booked 0800 PUKE. And the government has booked 0800 SODOFF.
This is the plan from British Telecom to put letters back on telephone dials, heralding a return to the days when you rang Whitehall 1212 for Scotland Yard, Tim for the speaking clock, and That 69 for Oliver Reed. Words appropriate to the subscriber are thought to be easier to use than a series of arbitrary numbers that are quite meaningless. Apparently BT got the idea after watching Mrs. Bottomley try to explain her NHS sums. Anyway, Vincent, your question now. Whose ecstatic mistake ended up in court?
Is this the Mad Boffin?
Yeah.
Right. This is a fantastic story. This is James Edgar, who is a mad scientist. And he was trying to invent a new air freshener. And he was making it in his bath. He had great gallons of the stuff. Now, it turned out that after he produced a bath of this stuff called Airborne 10, that it was exactly the same formula as the drug ecstasy. He said he didn't know what he was doing. Although the sight of sewage workers surfing in the Gravesend sludge pool might have been a bit of a giveaway. Anyway, he was brought to court, and he was held in court for 17 months in remand, and the jury found him not guilty. They said they believed that he was making this stuff, but he didn't know it was ecstasy. But just be careful what you spray under your arms now.
I suppose that's the original acid bath, isn't it?
Ooh. Alan, whose fighting figures explode a few myths? Fighting figures explode. Myth.
That was an impression of Richard Burton doing Churchill.
That's right. but I've forgotten who.
Vincent's tongue is on my shin. So desperate is he to do this answer.
No, it's about the Blitz. Apparently,
it didn't happen.
No, apparently not. It wasn't full of cheerful cockneys dancing in the streets and singing News About the Brown. They were all pillaging and looting, and all the crime figures went up. They've just published all the statistics.
It's not true.
It's true. Yeah. There was one great bit which Jane's estimable paper published, which is that apparently to save money they trimmed the width of coffins, and by trimming the width of coffins they saved 500,000 cubic feet of wood in 1 year. But apart from that, the illegitimate birth rate doubled.
Well, I suppose there is a connection between the two. Vincent has it absolutely right. It's Her Majesty's Stationery Office has just published their statistical digest for 1939-45, which shows crime, divorce and strikes all increased during the war. Fighting with Figures, the book is called, contains some surprising facts about wartime Britain. By 1945, the number of illegitimate births had more than doubled, which accounts for the high number of school leavers applying to become traffic wardens in 1961. It also proves that stuff they put in the tea can't have worked. The scores at the end of round three are still tied at 12 all. Francis, here's a piece of music for you. That was Let's Dance by Chris Montez. The question is, who are taking their partners to go for gold?
It's the Olympics. The International Olympic Committee.
That's it.
Is going to allow ballroom dancing as an Olympic sport. For reasons best known to itself. It's also going to allow all sorts of things. Trampolining and acid house parties. And God knows what. They'll have to go easy on the random drug tests, I think, with the acid house parties. Well, and with the ballroom dancing. Totter sweet sherry and you'll be disqualified.
Here's a sport we can win. Because not only are we world champions, the people in Rochdale, at ballroom dancing, but the subsect genre of Latin dancing is not best done in Latin countries, but is done best in Aberdeen.
We can beat the world in all sorts of... We lead the world in clodhopping, but doesn't mean that John Major's allowed to go and win Olympic gold for us, because he's so good at it.
This is the proposal to add several new events to the Olympics, including surfing, roller skating and ballroom dancing. The Olympic Committee suspect that this is a ploy by the British to find something they can win at, said the captain of the New English Croquet, Fox Hunting and Dominoes triathlon team. Jane, where was justice not served on a plate?
Well, this is my favourite story of the week. It's a tragic story in a way. It's about four prisoners who complained successfully that they couldn't possibly sit through the trial because they hadn't had a decent lunch. They'd only had two thin sausages and some tea-style drink, which had been served to them by the new privatised catering company run by Securicorp. And so, anyhow, they were bustled off and given a nice warm meal. But the best comment for me came from the Securicorp spokesman, who said it was an experiment and they were aiming to provide more airline-style food, which really said
just
it all.
Securicorp rather than Group 4, or else the sausages wouldn't have survived.
Gone missing, yes.
They'd have loved the knife.
They'd have been 100 miles away by that time.
Apparently all the usual supplies of pâté de foie gras, bœuf en croûte and crêpes Suzette have been rushed to Croydon to feed Eric Cantona.
Vincent, your question now. Whose busty assets should be barbecue?
Ah, yes.
Lucky fellow.
Well, I wanted this one so much. This is Barbie, who is a threat to the stability of Iran. A fatwa has been slapped on Barbie. The sight of blonde bimbos in expensive clothes with dyed hair is enough to destroy the culture of that great country. The chief fatwa imposer said, "Our children must be protected from this evil Western style of living in the shaping of the body, the voluptuous fullness of the lips, and the blonde styling of the hair." So, no more trips there for Michael Heseltine.
Absolutely right, but a new Barbie doll that takes account of Middle Eastern sensibilities is being produced. It's covered from head to foot, wears a yashmak, and for added realism, the hands are removable. Now,
you walking home alone in the dark afterwards?
Alan?
Yes.
I lapse into something here, so forgive me. Where do they have ways of making you pass?
I was thinking about Ken, Barbie's boyfriend, who hasn't got any... Well, I mean, he's... Less equipped than the Fuhrer you mentioned. I wonder what they make of him in Islam. They'd probably think they were removed for some unspecific shoplifting misdemeanor. Yes, I think it's about Wigan.
It is
about
Wigan.
Germans coming to Wigan to pass the driving test.
Yes,
it's a reprisal raid.
Right.
They're parachuting into Wigan.
Right.
Unable to bring Wigan to its knees during the recent unpleasantness. They're now coming on 300 quid trips and knocking over bollards and policemen and chasing little old ladies across zebra crossings.
Well,
because they
like
can't
that.
Pass their tests in Germany because they can't read. It's all something to do with the European Union, as it might be.
Yes.
I'd like to go to Germany and pass my driving test. I'd like to go in a tank.
You're absolutely right, Alan. This refers to a scheme whereby Germans are flying over to learn to drive and take their tests in Wigan. So far, four have passed through the course and are easily spotted back home. They're the ones driving on the wrong side of the autopilot. In Germany, the driving test is much stricter and includes a written exam. Anyone failing three times is given psychological treatment, whereas anyone failing three times in Wigan is given a minicab license. Before we reveal the final scores, which are strangely similar, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis?
Yes, Barry, this is from a little local newspaper in Eastbourne called Friday Ad, and suggests that Peter Tatchell's campaign to out public figures is getting rather out of hand. Outing, Tuesday, 21st of March. House of Commons and Chelsea pensioners. Pickups arranged.
Thank you. Jane, what have you brought for us?
This is from the Chiswick, Brentford and Isleworth Times. It says a dancing flasher brought an evening class to a standstill in Bedford Junior School last week. A group of women were enjoying their regular Tuesday night dance class in Hatton Road when they spotted the man exposing himself through the window and gyrating his hips in time to the music. Police may have trouble tracking him down, however, as the low window only gave the startled women a view of the man from the waist down. A police spokesperson said they were not planning to hold an ID parade. We haven't got a lot to go on, she commented.
Very comprehensive. Vincent?
Well, in keeping with the style and tradition of the programme tonight, my piece comes from a German newspaper in Bremen via The Big Issue, which concerns the fearful fate of Herr Günther Burpus. Herr Burpus, aged 41, mislaid the keys to his house and attempted to crawl in through the cat flap. Unfortunately, he got stuck halfway and couldn't get out again. A passing group of students then spotted him and decided to take advantage of the poor man. So they removed his trousers, as you do, painted his buttocks bright blue and stuck a daffodil in his bum and erected a sign saying, Germany resurgent, an essay in street art, please give generously. Passers-by were assured that Herr Burpus's screams were all part of the act and he remained stuck there for 2 days. He was only freed when an old woman called the police. I kept shouting for help, said Herr Burpus, but people kept saying, very good, very clever, and throwing coins at me.
Alan.
Well, I came along with a newspaper cutting tonight, Barry, but as I walked through the door, BBC's subversive shoved this internal memorandum into my hand, which has BBC at the top, and it's a note to employees. It says, Panorama rescheduled in Scotland, Northern Ireland and North of England. The Panorama interview with the Prime Minister, shown in England and in Wales last Monday, will be broadcast in Scotland, Northern Ireland and North East England tomorrow. It will replace a repeat screening of the comedy series, Men Behaving Badly.
Everybody's won. It's 16 all, but both sides are winners. Thank you. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Radio Times.
A20, the Red Queen, a film portrait of Barbara Castle, now a life peer and celebrating her 85th birthday this year. She tells of her first sexual encounters and of her love affairs. She also meets Tony Blair for the first time and delivers her verdict.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Jane Thin and Vincent Hanna. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Alad Evans.